Radio MD. RadioMD.com.
Dr. Michael Fenster is a cardiologist, a gourmet chef, author, TV personality, and host of Code Delicious. Here's Dr. Mike.
Hello, Food Nation, Healthy Nation. Are you ready for the scrumptious and the salubrious, all wrapped up into one tasty, tasty treat? I know that you are, and I know that you know. That means it's time once again for another Code Delicious. I am Dr. Mike, and I am here with a very special guest today, Tana Amen, like Montana, but she is not Hannah Montana. She is the real Tana. Tana Amen, she is an RN, a BSN. She is co-author with her husband, Daniel, of The Brain Warrior's Way and The Brain Warrior's Cookbook. Bestsellers, you definitely want to check that out. They're excellent. She is also the executive vice president of Amen Clinics, highly respected health and fitness expert. She's been on TV shows. You may recognize her from The Doctor, The Today Show, Good Day New York, and The Joy of Bahar Show. Tana, it is great to have you on the program today. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Mike. I'm happy to be with you.
So can you tell us a little bit about your background? Because I'm interested on how you became, you know, a brain warrior. I mean, did you get in a headbutting match with somebody? How did all that come about? I love what you guys are doing. And I'm always curious as to, you know, what perspective people, you know, kind of come into this space from.
So I'm glad you asked that. A lot of people think that I began writing these books and coaching because I'm a nurse. The truth is I became a nurse and started writing these books to heal myself, to save myself. So two things actually sort of came together and collided. One was I grew up very poor and not well. I was a really sick little kid. So growing up in a lot of trauma and drama, and was one of those kids always on antibiotics and sort of going through life sick a lot and having my first surgery at 9 years old and then finding out I had thyroid cancer that metastasized in my early 20s, which is kind of rare for that kind of cancer to metastasize. And came back multiple times, had to have numerous surgeries and radiation treatments and other health issues that occurred as a result. And there was one other incident, and that was that I was physically assaulted when I was walking to school when I was 15. And it was a really scary moment. It was a man that overpowered me. And I remember being terrified for days after that. I fought really hard. I got away. But the realization that I could have been raped was scary. And I thought, you know, I don't like this feeling of being a victim. I don't want to be a victim. I don't want to go through my life being a victim. And after I overcame the fear, I thought, yeah, no, I'm not okay with being a victim. And I started training. So I started training to be strong and think like a warrior. And when I got sick physically from the cancer, I realized I could use that same mindset, that you have to be a warrior for your health, because I'd gone into a really deep depression. And I realized the only way I'm going to get out of this is if I start training like a warrior, thinking like a warrior, and behaving like one, and pull myself out of this. I can't be in a victim mode, or I'm not going to win. I'm going to lose the fight. And that was the fight of my life.
Wow. That is absolutely a brilliant story. And I've got to share with you, some of our listeners know, some may not. I've been involved in the martial arts for many decades. And it was in my teens, I did not experience the horrible trauma you did. But I think nonetheless, those are formative years for us. And certainly for me, it probably saved me. My worst enemy was myself. And so it probably saved me from myself and instilled some things. And as you said, a way of thinking. And you know, people look at the martial arts and certainly, you know, I think we all enjoy a good martial arts movie. But what it's really I think teaching us at the higher level is what you just mentioned, which is just so important. It's about a consciousness, a way of thinking, a way of viewing the world. And as you said, getting out of a victim mentality that's so easy to fall into, especially I think as we look around in our modern culture today, we can certainly see a lot of that. But that perspective, I think, is really, really important. And the second thing that you mentioned that really struck me as critical for all our listeners, for anybody really dealing with anything, is how physical or health related, is how important that attitude is, because I think if you take a victim attitude and give me your perspective as a health professional, as a nurse who's dealt with patients, you know, that's when we see patients not do well. That's when I think they fail to thrive. And it's not to say that, you know, everything is dependent on attitude, but gosh, I think certainly a lot of it is. What's your take on that?
I couldn't agree with you more. So we say the reason we call it the Brain Warrior's Way is because it's a war. If you've ever been sick, you know it's a war. If you're taking care of someone sick, you know it's a war. And if you have children who are sick, or, you know, if you're overweight, diabetic, whatever it is, if you're out there, there's everywhere you go, there are messages that are not good for you. And you don't have to give in to that. But if you have a victim mentality of, oh, there's nothing I can do about it, then you lost. You've lost that war. You don't even have to be, you know, there's some people who are peaceful warriors. My husband's one of those people. He's like the yin to my yang. And that's great. He's a peaceful warrior. And the way you stay out of a fight, how do you stay out of a fight? You know, as a martial artist, you're prepared, you're aware, and you're trained, and you're always paying attention. And you're not in a victim mentality. I remember when I went into for my first lesson, all I wanted to know was how to fight. I'm like,
right,
I don't ever
don't
want
we
to
all
attack me again, right?
I think we all do. We all step in there, yeah.
And I never want to be attacked again. I want to know, you know, how to kick some tail if I have to. And my master, who's amazing, he laughed and he said, "Okay, we'll get there, but let me just be very clear. I'm going to teach you how to run really fast." I was like, "What?" He goes, "You got to be smart." He said, "Look, it's not smart for you to go willingly get into a fight with someone bigger than you are. So I'm going to teach you awareness, attitude, posture, and running really fast when you have to."
That's right.
Stay out of the fight. But if you get into a fight, then let's talk about what to do.
Well, I think that's right. And to answer your question, you know, we have a saying that in terms of, you know, the swordsman, you could be very, very skilled, but the very best swordman never draws their blade. Because they
exactly.
avoid the conflict before they need to draw that blade. And I used to teach, you know, many years ago, and it's funny, I used to do the same thing. You know, once I had, you know, myself, I spent some time and had the good and fortunate ability to get over to Japan and train for a while. And you know, as a 20-something, you know, in the prime of my physical condition, just getting the tar beaten out of me, you know, by a 60, 70-year-old, you know, Japanese man who weighed half as much as me when he was soaking
Isn't that
awesome?
Wet.
and just laughed, you know, the entire time.
But it was very
humbling.
Yeah.
Well,
it
is.
Too.
It is, because what it shows is that your skill and your mental skill and the things you just talked about, that attitude is so important and can be superior. And, you know, we're gifted with speed and strength and flexibility in youth because we don't have any brains. At least I didn't. I can speak for myself. And it allows us to survive. But then it's up to us to start to acquire that wisdom. And I think some of the things that you said is really important, because so often we discount this type of mental attitude and we say, well, that's just a placebo effect. I know you've heard that in medicine as well. But my response is, so what?
So
Who
what?
Cares?
Thank you. So what?
Yeah.
If it's working, so what? Placebos are underrated, right?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there is a clear psychobiological component, I think, that ties in terribly. And I want to make sure we get into the books, The Brain Warrior's Way and The Brain Warrior's Way Cookbook. Folks, you want to definitely go out and get yourself a bunch of copies of that and give them away to folks that you care about. But, you know, that attitude is very important to our physical well-being. And I think that's something that particularly, I don't know which martial arts you studied. Mine is Eastern, predominantly Japanese-based, with influence from India and China as well. That is something very well known and understood with Eastern philosophies. In the West and Western medicine, I think we're just beginning to see the importance of that. From my perspective as an interventional cardiologist, hey, I just read a paper a couple weeks ago showing that depression is as potent a risk factor as cholesterol. And yet,
amazing,
next to cholesterol,
it?
Next to cholesterol, we don't even try to treat it. You know, it's well, you know, go out and have a good day. We need to do that. And what do we find? And this is where I want you to step in with some of the advice and some of the wisdom from the book. What are we finding out? That when we eat certain foods and they interact with us and our gut microbiome, that can affect our brain and can be associated with the development of things like depression, et cetera. So Tana, take it from there and tell us some of the insights with respect to this, to the book.
So I will. And I want to just speak to one thing you said regarding your mindset, placebo and all of that, because it's really not so much in our, well, it is in your head, but it's in your head in an actual very real biological way now. And we know
right.
that there's actually studies being done on forgiveness, which I think is really interesting. People who don't forgive, just to give you an example of how important mindset is, you know, we've all heard the saying, so to not forgive is like drinking a glass of poison and expecting the other person to die. But what we're finding now, and these are real medical studies being done, is that they're being done on forgiveness for a reason. So I love this one doctor. He's a burn specialist, and he started studying forgiveness because what he found is that when his patients did not forgive, they did not heal. When they were able to, he would give them a very specific guideline for forgiveness, and they began to heal much better. They always heal better. Same thing with other types of illness, cancer. I mean, there's been a lot of studies on this.
Yep.
What that shows you is that mindset and those exercises, which often involve things like meditation and prayer and other exercises,
yep.
They settle down the stress hormones in your body. It's biological. It's not just psychological. So it's really important, that mindset's critical.
You are absolutely right. It is, you know, what we might call psychobiological or psychoneural, et cetera. And I'm going to put a teaser out here, and I'll share with you. I have an upcoming book I'm just working on finishing that actually deals with a lot of that and looks at a lot of those studies, and it's called The Food Shaman. So, folks, you know, start looking for it on Amazon, and it's going to incorporate a lot of the things and a lot of the science that you just mentioned. So, all right, folks, you know, and be looking for the pre-orders on Amazon soon. And
I like
in
that
the
name.
Meantime, well, thank you very much. And it incorporates some of the shamanic tools, because those are non-denominational, non-religion-based, very ancient sort of pathways, but very, you know, applicable and involved in things like, as you just mentioned, forgiveness, mindfulness, being there in the present. And one of the things that really hooked me on that is that when you look and read some of the research and literature, all of these healers and no matter where they are in Siberia, the Amazon, et cetera, historically, they're always sort of about, hey, that we've got to heal ourselves first before I can reach out and help you. And I think that's an important thing for all of us in healthcare that we need to do a little bit better
question.
Job of.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's so true. And, you know, I love what you're talking about with food, with your book, because food is so interesting. So a lot of people, I think it's only recently we've been making these connections with food and how they actually affect your brain, your outlook, how you function and feel. But it's actually pretty rational and logical if you think about it, because food affects inflammation. So it triggers inflammation.
Yeah.
It triggers those same stress hormones to some degree, cortisol and some of those stress hormones that we talked about. It also affects things like your neurotransmitters. So it can affect, you know, in one way or the other, serotonin and dopamine. It affects how you digest, so whether or not you're getting the proper nutrients and minerals. So, of course, food is going to affect your mood, your outlook on the world. And we don't think of it that way. But, I mean, it's, for hundreds of years, we've had healers saying, let food be thy medicine. Hippocrates said it. You know, it's really important that we stop and step back and go, oh, this isn't hocus pocus. This is actually biology, right? So it's and like you said, yeah. Psychobiology. It affects the way you think. It affects your brain function. So it's really important. And I love that. And again, the reason we call the book The Brain Wears Away, we focus on mastery, over your brain and body. And that M in mastery is mindset. The A is assessment. You got to know what you need to change, right? Check on those numbers.
Right.
And the S is sustenance. And the sustenance chapter, which is the food, eat like a warrior. That is the largest portion of our program, believe it or not. It's a huge piece because it's so powerful. And then there's the training. How do you make it happen to where you break it down into small habits It's those small steps that you take every day that help you. And then the E is essence. It's turning your pain into purpose, because so many of us have been affected by something in our lives. And when you are able to focus on purpose, purposeful people live longer. They're happier. And the R is responsibility. It's the ability to respond and not make it about you, but make it about generations of you. And then being able to do it for years long, not a two-week program or a four-hour program or some other lie that we've been telling people for too long. It's got to be a rational program with no gimmicks.
Well, yeah, and it is, you know, and people often ask me, they say, well, you know, you're so busy, you know, Dr. Mike, you're here, you're there, you're writing, you're teaching, blah, blah, blah. You know, whenever do you find, you know, time for your martial arts? And I say, it's every day, because it's a lifestyle. It's not going into a dojo 20 minutes, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It's a way to live. And all the things you just pointed out become incorporated in those lifestyle changes. And, you know, I think what you're talking about is not only, because they do go hand in hand, it's not just about the physical health, but you're making people happier. And what did we find? I mean, this is the Harvard Happiness Study, right, that they just followed up on 75 years of, you know, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is, how many cars, boats, how big your house, etc. What matters at the end of the day is your relationships. And, you know, for all you big Facebookers out there, I'm sorry to break this news to you. It's not about how many friends you have or how many Twitter followers. It's about the quality of those relationships. And, you know, one of the lead researchers of the Harvard Happiness Study summed it up, and he said, you know, it's about happiness. It's about love. End of story. And, you know, these things that you're touching on there and changing lives that way, it's so powerful. I mean, you're not just adding years to lives, you're adding quality to life. And at the end of the day, Tana, you know, I think that's the most important thing.
I couldn't agree with you more. And there's a couple things you said that I think are really important. Number one was about time. People often say to my husband and I, because we're so busy. We have, you know, six, almost eight clinics. We're about to open two more, and we travel a lot, and I homeschool my daughter, and we're all over the place. And so when people say to me that, you know, I don't have time, how do you find time? It's very simple. I don't have time not to. If I want to be functional and energetic and focused and not in pain, and I don't want to be sick, which I never want to go back to that place of hell again, I'm going to do everything I can, and I don't have time not to. That's the first thing. You just make it to where you can't not do it. And the second thing is that this really works, and what you're saying is so true. This idea of happiness and joy, and you know, it really is fairly simple, so much so that our 13-year-old gets it. She said to me one day, she'd been very frustrated about something, I won't go into what it was, but she'd been very frustrated and upset, and she sort of worked through it. We went through our process with her and worked through it. Next day, she comes in, and she says to me, you know something, Mom? I figured something out. And I said, what? She goes, I have a great life. And I'm like, well, I'm so happy to hear that. She goes, no, seriously. She goes, seriously. She said, I figured something out. It's not the things that make me happy. It's the meaning I assign to the things. And I almost fell out of
my wisdom.
Chair.
What wisdom. What wisdom. That's got to make you so proud.
A 13-year-old can do this. You can do this.
Well, and you bring up the other thing, you know, you spoke about forgiveness, but, you know, hand to hand in that is gratitude, simple gratitude.
Right.
And again, you know, some of the studies that we refer to and the things that you talk about in this mastery practice of the brain warrior is, you know, hey, if you take some time and you become mindful and give gratitude for a meal of food, you know, my martial arts master told us when we were in Japan and we were having some sushi, he said, you know, you better thank this fish. It gave its life for you. It was the most noble thing this fish could do, but it has died so that you may go on and live. And yeah, you need to take a moment and thank that and think about that, you know, as you have dinner. And so often, and as you travel, I'm sure you do, like I see people just mindly, you know, eating these Cinnabons, they're like carry-on luggage, the size of these things.
Yeah.
As we transport, you know, around. So, what are some things with respect to food that folks can do to help themselves start to become, you know, a brain warrior?
So, you know, there's so, my gosh, that's why I have a cookbook to go along with the book, is because there's so much about food.
And folks, you need to buy both.
So a couple quick things they can leave with right now is wake up in the morning, and like you said, focus on gratitude, I think is great, but also water your brain. So my daughter and I have a ritual. We wake up in the morning, we have warm lemon water with a little bit of shaved fresh ginger and cayenne pepper. So we water our brain first thing in the morning. Fastest way to wake up your brain, focus. Studies done show that when you are properly hydrated, it increases your physical power by 19%. It increases cardiac output. It increases aerobic capacity. When you're dehydrated by only 1.5%, they studied on pilots, showed that it radically diminished their spatial reasoning and cognition. I don't want to be on that plane. So water your brain first thing in the morning, and that's one thing. Another thing you can do, and this speaks to your idea of mindfulness, because you know you can go through the book and you can see everything you're supposed to do, but why don't people do it? It's because they're not mindful. So if you just, instead of journaling, people who journal, they have 50% increased success. They're double the success rate of people who don't journal. But if you actually journal with intention, so I have people journal the night before. What is your intention for the next day? What do you intend to eat? What do you plan it all out the night before, including your exercise and what you plan to do the next day? Then journal whether or not you actually did it, and if not, why, and learn from it. Don't be furious, be curious. Those two things alone are going to radically transform what you do, staying hydrated and being mindful and journaling and planning your meals with intention. What where your focus goes, your energy flows.
Yeah, that is great. And actually, you know, just from an ability, from a chef's perspective, the ability to really make delicious, fresh, wholesome, authentic meals, you know, we call that mise en place. That's about laying out what you're going to use, and you can use it in a timely fashion. But when folks, you know, combine what you're talking about in terms of the intention, laying it out, make sure you accomplish it, you know, with a little bit of mise en place, you know, then it becomes, from a time perspective, very effective and economical, also from a financial perspective, you know, to eat very well. Because, you know, folks come to me and say, well, you know, Dr. Mike, that's great, but, you know, I can't afford this organic chicken. I was like, yeah, but you know what? If you save the bones and you make a stock while you're sitting around doing nothing on a Sunday afternoon, you just saved, you know, $12 from the four quarts of stock that you would buy, you know, so on and so forth. It becomes incredibly economical in both time and money. So, you know, these principles that you're giving folks to follow, you know, listen up, folks, take notes, start writing this down. This is really important. And it's never too late, you know, to start changing your ways. It's never too late to get on this train. You know, I think you would agree with that, you know, from treating folks in the hospital as a nurse.
Absolutely. Yeah, no question. It's never too late unless you just don't want to live any longer. Okay. If you've decided you're done and your mission here is finished. Otherwise, it doesn't matter if you're 80. If you want to be 85, then, you know, it's never too late. And we have many stories like that. And I like one thing you said. So there's no suffering required in getting well. You have to have this, which is why I have so many cookbooks. It's to teach people how to do this and enjoy. Okay, so you have to replace, not erase. So there are blueberry muffins. There are brownies. There are lemon bars and
yes.
Nutty butter cups, which are like little peanut butter cups, only they're a healthy version of them. So there's lots of ways to do this and be healthy and not suffer. That's one thing that I really think is important, and I love that you touched on that. And you and I are very aligned in this idea of having these tips. In the beginning of every chapter of my cookbook, there are tips in each section on how to either save time or money and be more efficient. And because those are the big complaints people have, no time, no money,
yep.
And I don't know how to start. So it's to increase all of those things and how to make it work in your life, because you've got to have those simple tips in place.
Yeah, absolutely. And Tana, can you tell folks, you know, where they can find you, where they can get the books, all that good stuff?
Absolutely. So our clinics, if you want information on brain health and clinics, are amenclinics.com. You can find information on the books at TanaAmon.com. You can also find them on any major bookseller, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any other bookseller that you go to. And we would love to have you. I've got recipes, some of the free recipes that you can look at on my website, and would love to have you join the community. I actually answer all my own Facebook questions.
Wow, that's a rare. There, hey, I do that, folks, too. So, but so
just
many
be patient.
Folks actually, yeah, exactly. I may not get to your, you know, the day, especially if it's been a you know, a rough day or a rough
right.
weekend on call. But for sure, you know, I definitely take a lot of pleasure in, like you do, the personal communication. You know, one of the other things that I think is very important, and you touched on this kind of when you went over and gave us a little bit of an overview, is physical activity. And I know some folks, you know, have some limitations in physical activity. Any recommendations and you know, to get folks started on that path as well?
So exercise is critical. Actually, there is very few things as powerful as exercise for increasing something called BDNF in the brain. BDNF is brain-derived neurotrophic factor. It is like Miracle-Grow for your brain cells. So exercise is turning out to be one of the most powerful things you can do to decrease inflammation and get you moving. And rather than focusing on, oh, I don't know the perfect routine, just remember all movement matters. Start doing something. And we've got a lot of tips on our websites. We have a lot of tips in the books. But start with walking if you have to. You know, lift some simple weights if you can. Do a yoga class. Do something you love. Like, I love martial arts. You love martial arts. But do something you love, because all movement matters. But you got to move. You've just got to start moving somewhere. And as you feel better, you're naturally going to want to do more.
Yeah, and I want to go real quickly, you know, back to one of the things you mentioned, because one of my philosophies, and this comes straight actually from the Buddha, so you may appreciate this. When it comes to food, I like to say there is no salvation in deprivation. So, you know, it's all about that middle path of, you know, moderation. We want to avoid gluttony, but we don't want to live miserable lives, you know, that consist of nothing but asceticism. And once again, folks, they can go to TanaAmen.com, AmenClinics.com, correct? Get the books, Amazon, all your booksellers. Is that right, Tana?
That's true.
Okay. And, you know, we just, boy, you have such wisdom, that I want to share with our guests. You got to tell us that you'll definitely come back on. It's been such a pleasure. I'm going to commit you on the air. You're going to come back on?
Yes, it went way too fast. I would love to.
It did. So we will have, you back on, but folks, until we meet again, may the only pain in your life be champagne.